Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yuma Daf Chav. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material access by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur on Daf Chof. You'll notice a Mishnah toward the upper part of the page. The topic that the Mishnah deals with has to do with the time of the Trumas Hadeshen. On the side under our topic heading, we've noted Nosei. The Nosei is the topic heading, Zmano Shel Trumas Hadeshen. The Trumas Hadeshen was a process or a ritual of removing ash from the fireplace where sacrifices were burnt on the top of the altar standing in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. So a panful of ash was removed. It's called Trumas Hadeshen, and the ash was then poured onto the floor of the Azora right next to the ramp leading up to the Mizbeach. In fact, there was a miracle that was associated with this, where the ash was absorbed miraculously into the ground. So the Mishnah. B'chol yoim tormen es ha-mizbeach b'kriyas ha-gever oy somuch loy bein lefonov bein lachrov. Every day, on a daily basis, we're talking about on a daily basis, not holiday, not Yom Kippur, just in the middle of the year, the trumas, the tormen, the removal of this ash, which, by the way, represented the more or less the beginning of the day's activity in the Beis HaMikdash. I don't want to commit myself right now to saying it was the first avoda of the day, and you'll see why in an upcoming Gemara why I hesitate, but nevertheless you can see the timing of this was B'kriyas HaGever. B'kriyas HaGever is a time that is near the time of dawn. What exactly B'kriyas HaGever is, there are two pshatim that we'll see in the Gemara. One of them is what you might say the rooster crow, and the other could be a reference to a man making an announcement. But if you know at what time of day the rooster starts to crow, so you have a good idea of what time of day we're talking about. So it's that time, and the Mishnah says it might be a little before or a little bit after, but that's the time of day generally that Trumas Hadeshen took place. Uv'yom Kippurim mechatzos. On Yom Kippur, Trumas Hadeshen was done at midnight. Uberogolim, when it comes to holidays, Me'ashmores Horishona, from the first breakdown of the night. And as far as how many Ashmoros there were, so there is a sugya in Maseches Brochos that deals with it. Here, Rashi quotes that, and he says it's at the end of the first third of the night. So that if you're dealing with, let's say, a 12-hour night, and the beginning starts at, let's say, 6 p.m., this would be at around 10 p.m., approximately. We continue in the Gemara. The lo hoiso kriyas hagever magas, when it comes to the holidays, the time of kriyas hagever would come about at shoisa azor maleo Yisrael. The azor, the temple courtyard, was filled with masses of people. We're talking about the holidays, and on the holidays, the nation of Israel came to the Beis HaMikdash to bring their sacrifices. So, and their sacrifice offering would ensue right after the Tomid Shel Shachar would be offered. The Tomid Shel Shachar being the daily public Ola sacrifice, which had to be the first korban offered every day. The Gemara. Tanan Hossam. We have a Tanaic source from Maseches Vochim. Evorim Shepoku Me'al Gabi HaMizbech. Evorim are limbs of a sacrifice that jumped off the Mizbech. Now, How can a limb jump? So in a crackling fire, this could happen, as maybe some of you have experience with a campfire or a bonfire, and you notice how things jump out of crackling fires. So a limb, that might happen. So, koidem chatzos yachzir umoyalin bohen. Before chatzos, the limb must be put back into the fire, and if one derives personal benefit from it, he would be, namely not putting it back into the fire, but deriving personal benefit from it instead, he would be guilty of mi'ila. Mi'ila is the sin involved with deriving personal benefit from things that are sanctified. And the idea here is that until the limb is consumed by the fire, one, it still has its sanctity associated with it that would lead to this particular avera. Rashi explains, across from here, umoylin ben, v'koydim chatzos eino choshev equal, before midnight, it's not considered equal. Equal is consumed, be'ever sheyesh bo adayin mamish, with regard to a limb that still has substance to it. Obviously, if we're talking about a limb that's completely turned to charcoal, that would not be our issue right now. We're talking about a limb that still has substance to it, has meat on it yet, and it's before midnight, so this must be put back into the fire if it came out of the fire. It means the fireplace, lachzir means return to the fireplace, but kevan shalonas is kol mitzvosin, and since it hasn't been completely consumed yet, kodshe Hashem karina bay, it's referred to as that which is sanctified to the Almighty, the is be me'ila lenanin mimenu, and that would result in a me'ila sin. That's the sin associated with those that derive personal benefit from it. However, li'achar chatzos lo yachzir, if the limb jumped out of the fire, so lo yachzir, Rashi says lo tzorech, he doesn't have to put it back into the fire. And since we're talking about after midnight, if you do derive personal benefit from it, there won't be a me'ila violation. And the interesting thing here is that you're talking about something that still has substance to it. We're not talking about the charcoal. The charcoal, obviously, even before chatzos, there would be no me'ila. But here we're talking about something that has substance to it, but since midnight passed, the time, the midnight passage creates a legal consumption of the limb. And since there's no longer any, what Rashi calls tzorech gavoa, there's no any heavenly need, holy need, almighty requirement of return to the fire, it's no longer called Kodshei Hashem, it's no longer called sanctified to the Lord. And therefore, since the Pasuk in the context of Me'ilah, and Rashi quotes this, says, V'chata b'shgaga mikodshei Hashem, the violation of Me'ilah is only when you're dealing with something that's Kodshei Hashem, that's classified as sanctified, this, since midnight has passed, and only now it comes out of the fire, it's no longer classified as Kodshei Hashem, hence no more Me'ila. Mino hani mili. So the Gemara asks, from where do we know that midnight creates equal? Equal is translated as consumption, but it's this, we'll just call it, it's this boundary in time. From where do we know that? Omar Rav. So now notice, before we get into the Gemara, we have a new marking, and on the side under our Mivneh, our topic heading, you can see we've noted Rav and then Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan appears on the next Omid. Shtei Gishot, two approaches, Be'inyan Hazman, Laktoros Evorim Ala Mizbeach B'meshach HaLaila. Two approaches to the issue of the time with regard to the burning of limbs in the course of the night. Just by way of general information, the offering of sacrifices, namely the slaughtering and the sprinkling of the blood of sacrifices, is not to be done at night. After sundown, that's strictly prohibited. However, limbs that are left over from the day's sacrifices can be brought onto the Mizbeach over the course of the night and put into the fire. So our sugi here is focusing on that aspect of the sacrificial activity. So now, right now, we're interested in where do we see the significance of midnight in being a boundary as far as the issue we discussed, the issue of mi'ilah and consumption. Again, when we speak about equal and consumption, we've pointed out many times in our Gemara markings, Daf Yomi Shurim, that one is not to be fooled by translation. Here we're dealing with a legal concept. In other words, you can have the same level of burning vis-a-vis a limb. That's the same amount of, let's say, limb consumption by the fire, where before Chatzos there would be a Me'ilah violation for benefiting from that limb. And after Chatzos, the same limb with the same state of consumption will no longer lead to a Me'ilah violation. So where do we know this? Omar Rav. So Rav explains, one pasuk says that the entire night is for burning. The whole night is for the removal of the ash, as we mentioned before, the Trumas Hadeshen. So if you take that pasuk literally, it would mean that the whole night, as Rashi says, is considered equal. It's considered as if it's consumed. Let's look at the Rashi together, four lines from the bottom. These psukim are right next to each other. The pasuk that describes Trumat Hadeshen also mentions Kol Halayla. So, Almo Kol Halayla Hu Choshiv Ke'ikol. That would indicate then that the whole night it's considered as if it's been consumed. V'kori Basar Ha'ula. And it refers to the meat of the Ola sacrifice, Deshen, Mishemoshla Bohaur, once the fire takes hold of it, even if it hasn't consumed it very much, just it's taken hold of it, the Kosher Larimo, and it's allowed to be removed. So when you look at these two psukim, you say, make up your mind. Is the whole night for burning, or is the whole night for removal, as Rashi said, because just by the mere exposure to the fire, that's it, it's considered consumed, even if most of the limb is still intact. So how do you resolve these two seemingly contradictory psukim? Ha, ketzad. So Rav says, well, you make a compromise. In other words, the purpose, not that we make the compromise, but that's what the Torah wants, that's what the Almighty wants. Chalkehu, split the night. Chetzio la'aktar v'chetzio la'aroma. Half is for burning, and half is for removal. And that would mean that at midnight, there's no longer any obligation of putting things back into the fire. That if something was in the fire through midnight, it is considered as if it experienced equal. If we look at Rashi at the bottom, Chetzio la'aktor, she'eno equal, the first half of the night is for aktor, it's not considered consumed, v'impokotzor la'atzir, la'aktir, and if it jumped out of the fire, it has to be put back in for burning. V'chetzio la'aroma, mechatzos la'alon, kori deshen, from midnight onwards is for removal, it's called deshen, deshen means ash. Almo chatzos, mashvila equal, so according to this, you see that midnight is that boundary point at which we can now say it has experienced equal. That's Rav. What we see now in the Gemara, Rav Kahana raises a question. This is a long question. It will take us to the second line from the top of Omid Beis. Mosiv Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana quotes our Mishnah. B'chol yoim terminus ha-mizbeach, b'kriyas ha-gevro somuch lo bo'in l'fono bein l'achrov. On a daily basis, the ash was removed from the fireplace of the mizbeach at kriyas ha-gevro, the time of, as we said before, as the rooster crows, either a little before or a little after, u'b'yom ha-kippurim mechatzos, and at Yom Kippur, the removal of ash would take place at midnight. Now, here we dashed underline. This is the most significant point in this source. It says that on a holiday, when there were massive amounts of sacrifices, they had to start the Trumas HaDeshen, the Deshen removal, at a much earlier time, namely, as we said before, at the end of the first third of the night. So what do we see here? Emphasizing the dashed underline, we have ash removal, haroma as it's called, not from midnight onwards, but from before midnight. The Gemara continues at the top of Omid Beis. If as Rav posited that midnight is a Torah point in time, hechi makdaminon, how can we do the haroma, the removal of ash, the removal of korban material before midnight? Elo omar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan now presents his approach. Mimashma shenemar kol halayla. The pasuk, by having said just the words kol halayla, eini yodea shehu ad haboker. Don't I understand that the end of night is at morning? Uma talmud lomar ad haboker. Why does the pasuk have to say, in addition to saying all night, it says all night until the morning? That until the morning, which the pasuk says, would seem to be extra, unnecessary. So why does the Torah add that phrase? Uma talmud lomar al haboker. So what does that tell us? Tein boiker leboikroi shel laila. Now this expression is a little bit vague, so we'll take a look at the Rashi. First, we'll start with the Rashi, Elo Om Rabbi Yochanan. On the fourth line from the top, Loi Teima Chetzio Lekach Bechetzio Lekach. Don't follow Rav's approach, which says split the night half for Haktor and half for Haroma. Elo Hochi Doresh HaKosuv. But rather, thusly, Hechshir Kol HaLayla, the availability of the night, is Bein Laktora, She'ein Mu'kolin, it's for burning those things that have not been consumed, Bein Laharoma, Yimyesh Deshin Mu'kol. The whole night is available for removal of the ash for the Trumas HaDeshin purposes, and we mentioned you put on the floor of the Azora next to the ramp. The whole night is available for that too, if there is im yesh deshen meukol, if there is consumed limbs that are consumed and turned to ash. The chatzos, the oise iku beivorem, shemosh ben ur, mehocha nafka. And as far as midnight being responsible for limb consumption regarding those limbs that have been exposed to the fire beforehand, is learned from here. Mimasha shenema b'aktora kol alaylo al-mokta, from the fact that the posuk says that the whole night is for burning. Eini yodea sha'at ha-boker kol alaylo. Don't I understand that until the morning that is called night? Uma talmud lomar ad ha-boker. Rashi continues. What does the posuk spell that out for? So tein hashkoma l'achiris l'bokro shalaylo. It means add an earlier time to the boker of the night. What does that mean? That's still quite vague. Rashi explains. Bokro shalayla hu alos hashachar. The morning of the night is dawn. V'nosan lo hakosuv boi boker acher. The extra term ad haboker is telling me there's another boker, another morning, but an earlier time, lomar, to tell me, she'ein tzorch lahaktir min hashkoma v'eilech, that you don't have to burn anymore from the early time onwards. V'kevan shelo nosan zman bo'iser boiker, since the Torah doesn't dictate that time, the time from which you don't have to bother being maktir anymore, al korchichu chatzos laila, then it has to be, out of default, if you will, it has to be midnight. So what are we saying so far then? As far as the din of chatzos being the boundary time for limbs that were exposed to the fire, after which if they come out of the fire they don't have to be put back in, that's learned from this extra term ad haboker. However, the whole night is available for haroma. So, since the whole night is available for haroma, kavu chachomim zmano hakol lefisha because of Versaki, as far as on a daily basis when there aren't a lot of korbanos to process, and you can therefore do the trumas hadeshen toward the end of the night. And when it's Yom HaKippurim, let's continue with the Gemara now, where we left off. So we're having learned the Rashi, we understand what Rabbi Yochanan said, that Tein Boker LeBokril Sholaila, and we saw all of this in the Rashi. It was from that we learned that there that from the Chatzos is the time of equal. But as far as Haruma is concerned, if you have something that's, if you have a real deshen, real ash, or coals or ash, if you have that, as far as removing that from the fireplace for the purpose of Trumas Hadeshen, that could be done all night. And that's what we now, and since it could be done all night, this was a sliding scale of time, the Chachamim established when it shall be done, depending on what time of year, what is it, what holiday it is, or is it not a holiday, etc. So as far as this approach is concerned, it's left to the Chachomim when to establish, and not like Rav seemed to indicate that it depended midoraisa on before Chatzos versus after Chatzos, but rather, we're being a little repetitious here, but rather as far as when you can do the Trumas Hadeshen, you really do have all night for that. Hilkoch. We continue in the Gemara. Five lines from the top, second word on the line. Hilkoch. Bechol yoim terminus mizbeach b'kiris hagever somuch lo bein lefonav bein lachrov sagya. On a daily basis, the removal of the ash from the mizbeach would be done b'kiris hagever. We say that's around the time the rooster crows, whether it be a little before or a little after. Sagya means that's enough. In other words, you don't have to make it any earlier than that. You'll have enough time to do everything else. But Yom HaKippurim Dika Chusha Dekain Gadol, when it comes to Yom Kippur, when we have to concern ourselves with the strength, Chusha means the weakness of the Kain Gadol. After all, everything is dependent on him. So Rashi says, it's upon him to do everything when it comes to the Yom Kippur service. He's got to get up earlier. And therefore, that is done from Chatzos. Ubiragolim, the Gemara continues, the Nefishi Yisrael, the Nefishi Korbonos, when on the holidays, when there is a lot of people, and there are a lot of sacrifices, and as a result of a lot of sacrifices, there's a lot of ash that is produced, and that large amount of ash, in addition to the initial Trumas Hadeshen, the rest of the fireplace is cleaned away. The ash is taken from the fireplace itself and put in the middle of the mizbeach, where there's a large mound of ash that accumulates. So that takes time. So you've got to get the we'll call the ash activities started early in order to give enough time to clear out the fireplace, moving all of the ash to what's called the tapuach, the mound of ash that's to the side of where the fireplace is located. That's what's meant here. There are a lot of Jews, unefishi korbanos, a lot of sacrifices, resulting in a lot of ash, as we said. Avdinon me'ashmos rishona. The Trumas Hadeshen is done from the morning, from the first third of the night, from 10 p.m. Kidekotoni taimo, as the Mishnah spelled out. This is a quote from the Mishnah, Lohois Kriyas HaGever Magas, on a holiday, by the time the rooster crows, Achoisa Azora Malei Israel, the temple courtyard was filled with people, giving you a sense of how many sacrifices were offered and how much ash would accumulate. my kriyas hagever. We've used this expression all the way through. What does it really mean? Two pshatim. Rav Omar, kora gavra. That means a man, an appointed individual, would call out, announcing the time to get up. And if it's during the course of the year, announcing to the kohanim, get up, because we have to do the Trumas Hadeshen. Rav Shilo Omar, that the term Kriyas Hagever is Kora Tarnagola, a reference to a rooster crowing. And now we have a story that accompanies this. You could see from the long marking that this story lasts a number of lines. Rav Iklo La'asrei de Rabbi Shilo. Rav visited the town of Rabbi Shilo. Now, this is, we're talking at the time of the Gemara when all kinds of, let's say, picture devices and cards featuring rabbinic figures and all that were not popular. People didn't know necessarily what Rav looked like in Rav Shilo's town. So Rav arrives in Rav Shilo's town. Lo have a amora lemeka malei de Rabbi Shilo. And there wasn't an amora was a, if you look at Rashi, you'll find an interesting explanation of what an amora was. Lo amora, meturgamon. Meturgamon is a person who would stand, ha'oimed lifnei chochom adarshan. He, you have a person that's positioned next to the sage that is lecturing. Va'chochom loichesh lo loshen ivris. The sage, the Talmudic scholars, would speak in Lashon Ivris. Lashon Ivris could be translated as Hebrew. They were speaking Hebrew. V'hu metargim l'rabim Lashon Shehein Shomin. And he, the meturgeman's role, or the amora as he is known, his role was to translate the information he was listening to in Hebrew, and he would say it over to the public in Aramaic, that were, as Rashi says, Loshon Shein Shomin, a language that they understood. So that it's interesting to note here that as far as Hebrew as a spoken language by the masses, so at the time of the Gemara, it doesn't seem to be that that was the case. However, rabbinic figures, it seems, did speak in Hebrew. Of course, taking into consideration that the Mishnayos and the Midrashic texts are primarily in Hebrew. The Gemara itself is that which was recorded in Aramaic, being that that was the tongue that people understood at the time. So the Amora's role was to say over to the public, certainly, of course, in an audible fashion, that which was being taught by the sage. So he was the human PA system and translator. So Rav, being that he saw that in Rav Shilo's town there was no one that was there at the when Rav visited, there was no one serving in that capacity. So come Rav Ole, Rav got up and he served in that capacity. Once again, people saw a man getting up. They didn't know who it was. Now, Rav Shilo was holding forth on some topic, and in the course of his discussion, the term Kriyas HaGever came up. The Komeforesh and Rav in hearing from Rav Shilo Kriyas HaGever, so the Komeforesh, my Kriyas HaGever, he explained, what is Kriyas HaGever? Kora Gavra. Rav said to the public, a man announced. That was how Rav explained Kriyas HaGever, that Rav Shilo had whispered to him, so to speak, or told him. And Rav is the public address system. He tells the public, Kora Gavra. Omar Le Rabbi Shilo. Now Rabbi Shilo hears Rav's translation. He says, V'lema mor Kora Tarnagola. Why don't you say rooster crowing? Why, when I said Kriyas HaGever, why did you use the explanation of Kora Gavra? Why didn't you say rooster crowing? Omar Lay. So Rav responds. And he responds with a with a saying. We have this in quotation marks, and then the explanation, not the translation of the saying, but the explanation will follow. So Rav says as follows. He says, Abuv l'chori zemer, the flute to the chori are the important people, the rich folk, the leaders, the b'nei chorin, chori b'nei chorin, the free man, but means Rashi says is to the free man. The flute is zemer, is pleasant music. Lagardoi lo mekablua mine. However, if you start playing the flute next to a weaver, they don't enjoy that. So that you can have the same instrument that important people will enjoy, and the lesser folk will not. Now, the gardoi, the weaver, is referred to as the lesser folk. There are other references in Shas to that description. Nevertheless, what's the point over here? So Rav explains, Ki have ko'imno alei derabchia umafrishna maikriyas agever kora gavra. Well, when I was, and again, this is kind of like, right now, Reb Chiya was a very well known, he was the Godol Hador of that time. So Rav is telling Reb Shiloh, he says, you know, when I was serving in this capacity as Amora for Reb Chiya, Reb Chiya would say Kriya Segever, and I would say Kora Gavra. Volomerli, Volomidi, he didn't point anything out, he didn't say anything. In other words, that's how Reb Chiya understood. Kriya Segever means Kora Gavra. Ve'ar Amrezli, Emo, Kora Tana, Gola, and you. And of course, it's well known that Rav Shila was not on the level of Rav Chiya, and he says, "And you are trying to say something else. You're saying I should say rooster cackle." Amar Le, Rav Shila, upon hearing this, he realizes then who is standing next to him. Mor Nihu Rav, oh you! I didn't know who you are. You're Rav. Rav was a well-known person as well. He was a famous, great individual. So Rav Shila apparently knew that Rav was the Amora for Rabbi Chiya. So he says, oh, you're the great Rav? Neinoch marbot. What are you doing serving me? Serving as a translator for me? Sit down in an honorable position, an honorable seat. I don't deserve to have someone the likes of you to serve as my translator. So Rav says, Amri Inchi, there's a common saying, Itagris le puts Amre. Rashi. Rashi on the first wide line under the Gemara text, Tagris le puts Amre im niskarte tzul odom leches yoim, if you were hired by someone for a day's work, kol melocha shiate lecha, anything he asks you to do, v'afilu hi bezuya, even if it's a lowly kind of activity, could go niput semer, like the combing of wool, shehi meleches noshim, that's something that women were known to do, asay lo, do it. If you're a hired person, you're going to be paid for a day's amount of work, whatever he asks you to do, do it, even if it's beneath your dignity. Afani me'achar sheishchati b'pulusecha egmor. Look, I started, I am going to finish. Let's continue in the Gemara. Iko diamri, hachi amale. Thusly, another version is thusly. Rav said to Rabbi Shilo, "Malin b'kodesh v'lo maridin." When it comes to matters of holiness or Torah study, we rise in sanctity and do not descend. Rashi explains, "V'lo maridin gnai hadrosha hu." It would be belittling to your Torah lecture, she'ered ani v'yakum pachus mimeni legomra, that someone less than me should get up and finish off the job. In other words, you started a Torah lecture. Someone like myself, which you acknowledge, Rav was known as a great person. This isn't an expression of haughtiness. It's just a recognition of the reality that someone of his stature was serving at the beginning of the drasha, at the beginning of the lecture. It would be belittling to the lecture if someone lesser than me comes to finish it off. Malin b'kodesh, as the Gemara said, v'lo moridin. We rise and we do not lower. The Gemara continues with this machlokis Rav and Reb Shilo and what Kora Kriya Segever means. the triangles that you can see will introduce, as we see on the side, we have a mivne heading. These are Tanya Kavose, the Rav, and the Rebbe Shilo. Now, the Rebbe Shilo, Tanya Kavose, you will see that at the top of, third line from the top of Chof Aleph, Omen Aleph. So, these are Tanaic sources that support the two opinions. Tanya Kavose, the Rav, a Tanaic source that supports Rav, that it was a man that would make this announcement. The Tanaic source says, Gvini Cruz, Mahu Omer. Gvini was the name of a person. Cruz means the announcer. He was a person that was an announcer. What would he say? So this is to wake people up in the morning. Imdu Kehanim Lavodaschem. The Kehanim, you should rise from your sleep for your work in the Beis HaMikdash. Levim Leduchanchem. And Levim to get up for their role as musicians on the Duchan. Duchanchem is the platform on which the Levim were positioned in the temple courtyard. V'Yisraelim Amadchem, and Yisraelim are, in this case, are representatives of the nation of Israel that stood in the Beis HaMikdash when the public sacrifices were offered. They represented Klal Yisrael. V'Yakulo Nishma B'Shosh Parsois, and his voice, Gvini Cruz, his voice was heard at a distance of 3 parsa. Just to give you a feeling of what 3 parsa is, 1 parsa is 4 meal. So 3 parsas, 12 meal. 1 meal being approximately a kilometer. So his voice was heard over a distance of 12 kilometers. Maisa B'Agrippas HaMelech, there was an incident involving the king Agrippas. He was a king that lived at the latter time of the second Beis HaMikdash. Shoyabo Baderech, he was on the road. Vashoma Kolo Begimel Parsos, he heard Gvini Cruz at a distance of 3 parsa. The 3 parsa, we said 12 mil, 12 kilometers. Ukshabo Lebeso, and when the king Agrippas got home, Shiger Lo Matonos, he sent gifts to the announcer. Let's make the assumption that it's to Gvini. The Alpha Pekane, and even so, even though we've described this great vocal accomplishment, Kohen Gadol Meshubach Mimenu, the Kohen Gadol and his prayers on Yom Kippur in the Beis HaMikdash was even greater. The Omar Mor, it has been taught, Ukvar Omar Ona Hashem, the Kohen Gadol would say Ona Hashem, which is part of the Yom Kippur, the prayer of atonement. He would just say those words, V'nishma Kuloi B'Yericho. His voice would be heard in the city of Yericho. Now, you'll ask, well, how far was Yericho from Jerusalem? The Omar Rabo Bar Bar Chanom Rabbi Yochanan Mirushalayim Liricho Asora Parsi. Notice we underline here Asora Parsi, and above we underlined Sholosh Parsos. So the distance from Yericho, from Yerushalayim, where the Kohen Gadol was, to Yericho was 10 parsa, 40 kilometers. The Afagav, the Hocha, and here the Gemara goes through a couple of points showing not just the distance factor involving the greatness of the Kohen Gadol, 10 parsa versus 3, but when it comes to the accomplishment of the Kohen Gadol, we can accentuate it even more by noticing the next couple of factors. The Afagav, the Hacha Ika Chulsha Vacha Leka Chulsha. When it comes to the Yom Kippur, there you have the Chulsha, the weakness of the Tainus, as opposed to the general daily calling where there's no issue of Chulsha, there's no issue of weakness. The Hacha Yomama, the Hasam Laila. And the Yom Kippur calling of the Kohen Gadol was at during the daytime, and sounds during the day don't travel as effectively and at as great distances as sounds at night. V'hosam Leili is a reference to the calling, the announcer would wake the Kehanim Levim up when it was still nighttime. Why is it that voices or sounds by day are not heard as great as they are heard at night? So the Gemara answers now, this is a bit esoteric, so we're not going to be able to give a real deep understanding of this, but we'll read the Gemara all the same. Why at night do you have a greater chance of hearing things than by day? Because there's greater interference by day. There's noise interference. We'll just translate, but beyond that, it's hard to explain. It's the galgal chama, the ball of the sun, or the wheel of the sun, the ball of the sun, is menaser berakia. It's sawing away in the heavens, kechorosh, like a carpenter, a menaser barozim, a carpenter who saws into arozim, into wood. So there's during the daytime, you have, if you are asking why does your voice not travel, because it's competing against another sound, namely the sound of the chamo shemenase barakia. We continue. V'hai chirga diyoma, the chirga diyoma. This is the phenomenon of, we'll say, dust that you see when looking into the rays of sunlight, let's say coming through a window. So you see, you might notice dust in the air. So that's called chirgadima, lo shmei. Its technical term is lo, lamed aleph. V'hainu de ka'omar Nebuchadnezzar. And it's in this vein that Nebuchadnezzar, the famous emperor or king of Babylonia, he said, "V'chodayrei ara kelo chashivin," that all inhabitants of the world are like law, meaning they're like nothing, means like that dust in the air that one sees through the. Sees in the column of sunlight. Tanu Rabbanan. We now continue with a Tanaic source that follows from that which we just mentioned regarding the sun and its sawing away in heaven. Hilmole galgal chamo, if not for that phenomenon, nishma kol hamunis shiromi, that one could hear the voices of the multitudes of Rome. Now these are very, we'll say, mystical comments. We're not geared up for elaborating on these matters. But if this arouses anyone's curiosity, which our hope it certainly does, look into these things further. So the source continues, V'ilmole kohamonu shoromi, if not for the sounds of Rome, nishma kol galgal chama, one would hear the sounds of the sun. So that what's being described here is that you have two competing sounds that neutralize one another. Tanu Rabbanan, and another source dealing with sounds and noise, and again, esoteric. Sholosh kolos holchin misofo lomad sofo. There are three sounds that travel from one end of the world to the other. Ve'elohein, and they are as follows. Kol galgal chamo, kol hamunah shoromi, and number three, the kol nishoma b'shah shiyotzim naguf, and the sound produced by the soul as it departs from the body. In other words, at the time of death, the soul departure creates a very loud noise. Again, this is esoteric. So the term loud doesn't necessarily mean something that we measure in decibels, but again, that's beyond the scope of Gemara markings, Daf Yomi Shiurim. V'yesh Omrim, another opinion is, af leida, so too is birth. In other words, birth also involves a sound produced that goes from one end of the world to the other. And we continue at the top of Chof Aleph, Omer Aleph, v'yesh Omrim, af ridya, and so too the sound of ridya. Ridya, Rashi points out at the top, is malach hamemuna al hashokay saoretz Mimatar Hashamayim, Mimal Uminatahom Mitachas. This angel is appointed to the distribution of water to water the earth, whether it be from the waters of the heavenly waters or subterranean waters. The Korei Lohen, and this Malach summons the heavenly and subterranean waters. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Tahoim El Tahoim Korei Kidamrina Maseches Tainis, as it says over there, and V'yamrinan Hasam D'domi Le Egla, that it looks, this angel is similar to a calf. Lukach Nikro Ridya, and hence its name Ridya. The word Ridya is really associated with plowing. The Gemara at the beginning of Bava Basra talks about Bei Redu Yuma. So this word Ridya is associated with plowing. Lashon Shor HaChoresh. The Ridya is associated with a plowing ox. So that Lashon is Metargaminon Lo Sachrosh. The Targum, where the Pasuk says Lo Sachrosh, Bashor v'chamor yachdov, do not plow. Lo, the Targum, the Aramaic, is lo sirdi. So you see, sirdi is associated with plowing. So this angel, which has this image of a calf, again, these are very esoteric ideas. We cannot say anything beyond that which we are translating from the Rashi. So the Ridya angel also makes a noise when he summons the heavenly and subterranean waters to issue forth to water the land. This is a sound heard from one end of the world to the other. Ubo Rabbonan Rachmi Aneshoma Shebeshol Sheyotzim Aguf Uvitlu. And the Rabbonan prayed that the noise emitted by the departure of the soul from the body should be, let's say, muted, and they canceled it as a result of through their prayers. They canceled the loud noise that had been emitted. Again, we said loud, but we say that with our disclaimer, meaning it's not necessarily something associated with decibel levels. We continue in the Gemara, Tanya Kavosei, the Rabbi Shiloh. Rabbi Shiloh is the one that explained Kriyas HaGever in the Mishnah as referring to the rooster crowing. Hayotzin L'derech Kodim Kriyas HaGever, Domo Barosha, the Posuk, this Tanaic source says that one who departs on a journey early in the morning before the rooster crows, he is endangering himself. Domo Barosha literally means his blood is upon his head. And obviously if he encounters danger, it's because he brought it upon himself. Nighttime, or as a lone nighttime travel, is highly discouraged. Rabbi Yoshia Omer, Ad She'ishne. In other words, what time should you depart? When you hear it crow and repeat it. You know, it's a double crowing. V'yeshomrim Ad She'ishalish, some say three times. V'ezetanagul Omru, and regarding what kind of rooster are we talking about? The Tarnagol Beinoni, the average kind of rooster, that's not one that has insomnia or something, that gets up early and starts cackling too early. But rather a common average rooster. That's the time referred to here. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you're interested in being in touch with us, you can reach us at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.